Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Boise State football fans have been spoiled. Some pretty good quarterback play over the years. And when you watch the preseason, you watch NFL games, doesn't take a genius to figure out you better develop a quarterback. And this year, the teams without a quarterback are maybe trying to position themselves with a very good college crop coming out this year to get that quarterback that they think can be the one that can lead them to the promised land. But Chris Lewis, so many times it's like trying to grow a garden. You've got some teams with green thumbs out there that get their quarterback to thrive and flourish, and other times you've got coaches and front office staffs that are killing it and turning your quarterback into a weed.
And you started this by saying Boise State fans. Well, a lot of Boise State football fans would be tuned into the preseason game that was on national TV, ESPN, yesterday, where there was a lot of former Boise State Broncos playing on the Tampa Bay Bucks side. But what you saw wasn't a preseason game on ESPN. What you saw was a lesson in youth empowerment, a lesson in giving the young people power, and it leads to success. Google, Facebook, Amazon, Uber, some of the growing companies here in 2017, they're fast growing because of the empowerment of young people. And from the day that Jameis Winston arrived in Tampa, he was empowered. They gave him the power to be one of the leaders of the team. They said right away, we want you to be one of the leaders. They made him the starter right away. They didn't try to come up with some faux quarterback controversy in the preseason, telling them that he has to earn the job. Not what they did was said, you know what, Jameis, you're our first round pick. We're drafting you number one. We want you to be a leader. And for you to be the leader, you need to be the starting quarterback. And along the way, they have done extra things to help empower Jameis Winston and have him settled as the guy for the franchise. They fired a head coach just to keep the relationship between the quarterback and the offensive coordinator with Dirk Cutter there. Remember, it was Lovie Smith who was there the first year of Jameis Winston, and you know, Winston was showing some promise, so Dirk Cutter was getting opportunities to be a head coach somewhere else. So what did the Bucks do? The Bucks got rid of their head coach just to keep Dirk Cutter around. That helps their leader, helps their quarterback, Jameis Winston, keeping him empowered with the organization. He threw a lot of interceptions early. They didn't try to say, you know what, if you keep doing this, you're going to the bench. They kept him in there. They kept the aggressive Brett Favre-like mentality of him. They still want him to be aggressive, even though he has the high interception total. And he's not the only quarterback recently who's gotten that empowerment from the organization. Carson Wentz. The Sam Bradford trade was the moment of empowerment for Carson Wentz. They got rid of the quarterback that was there, and they said, you know what, Carson, we want you to be the leader. That was empowering your young player. Mariota was given the keys right away, empowering youth. Andrew Luck, right away, they said, number one pick, you're going to be the replacement for Peyton Manning. We're empowering you to do so. That's what leads to success.
But when you think about it, if you're getting one of these quarterbacks, you probably are picking towards the top of the draft. And that means you probably aren't very good right now. So when you look at your other prospects, I think you've got to put all your eggs in the basket of this said quarterback that you've identified as being great. Because you look at the other guys that are standing there on the sidelines with them, you can win a Super Bowl with them.
Because why was this game a lesson in youth empowerment? Because what you're describing is the other side. Mm-hmm. And the other side of this game was Jacksonville and their quarterback in Blake Bortles. And when this game went 8 for 13, 65 yards, it doesn't look terrible, although that yards per attempt is pretty bad. But if you watched the game, you saw he missed three different opportunities to create a big play with Allen Robinson. And going into the week, there was this Twitter video from one of the Jaguars reporters when Bortles overthrew Allen Robinson, threw it out of bounds. Basically, Robinson was kind of swearing to himself. He didn't know he was, you know, being videotaped by one of the reporters, but he's like, keep that bleep in bounds. So Blake Bortles is clearly frustrating a lot of people there in Jacksonville, but it's the opposite of what Tampa did. Bortles didn't start right away. Chad Henne, who happens to still be there, was actually the starter right away because they wanted to create this faux quarterback controversy. And Blake Bortles, you have to come in and try to win this job. and some of the other things that they did to just kind of take away the power of their young quarterback. They changed quarterback coaches after the first year. They fired a head coach during the third season of Blake Bortles. They had a defensive head coach in Gus Bradley, which meant that their style of play through the last three seasons, and Bortles is heading into his fourth, has been, we want to run the ball so much, and we don't really even want our quarterback to take chances. We want to run the ball and play solid defense, and that's how we want to win. That's the mentality of Gus Bradley, former coach, and that's what they kind of did in Seattle and what they wanted to implement in Jacksonville. Well, what that does is take away the power from your young quarterback, and for you to develop as a franchise, it's all about the dude you invested a third overall pick in the draft on. So looking at this preseason game, it was just a lesson of one team was Google, one team was Facebook, one team was Amazon, one team was Uber, and that being Tampa, they gave the young people power within that franchise, and look what it did. You have one of the most exciting cores in the NFL going forward. Jacksonville was the opposite, and they look like they're miserable.
You know who looks like they might be heading to Jacksonville is Denver. For a franchise that's run by one of the best quarterbacks ever, I think what I've seen in Denver, and maybe some of it's, you know, the coaching and the way the organization's played out, but I think Denver is looking a lot more like Jacksonville with how they've handled Paxton Lynch, who was their first round pick last year, than they look like Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, or Tennessee.
Or Tennessee or any of those other teams. But yeah, they haven't even like let us see Paxton Lynch for an extended stretch of regular season football. So I don't even know what's going on there, but they certainly have not empowered the young guy. And now you could say, well, what about Aaron Rodgers? They didn't give him power right away. But when you trade Brett Favre when he wants to come back to your team, mm-hmm. Well, that's a moment of giving a young quarterback power that you, Brett Favre, and everything he meant to Green Bay and for the organization to trade him when he wants to come back to that team to give Aaron Rodgers the keys to the car. There's your moment of empowerment for Aaron Rodgers. So it's not just all about like whether you started right away. Nah, it's about, are you letting your quarterback be a quarterback? And for a lot of these organizations, they're not doing it. L.A. with the Rams and Jared Goff is another example of they botched it from the beginning. They've now fired a coach with Jeff Fisher. They brought in a new one. They basically took away all the confidence that he had with the Hard Knocks. We saw it on a training camp and how they just took away his ability to feel confident behind center. So there's another example. Well, Carson Wentz was the number two pick. Jared Goff was the number one pick. Is anybody saying that they'd rather have Jared Goff going forward than Carson Wentz?
No. I mean, maybe the problem is the Rams maybe screwed things up. Maybe I didn't think Goff was that good. I didn't have Goff. I question whether Goff should have come out.
That's fair.
To the point that he was the number one pick. I didn't think he was ready. I didn't think he was that good at Cal. I watched him play three or four times at Cal, was not that impressed. Somebody obviously was to the tune of taking him number one. The quarterback position is so make or break. Were there better people in the draft last year than both Wentz and Goff? Probably so. But if you don't have a quarterback, you are not going to be an elite NFL team. And I think whenever your number comes up, and if there is somebody that can possibly be one of those quarterbacks, and you don't have one, you better take it.
Now, going back to your example you used to start this show, you brought in the garden example. Mm-hmm. Like, some have green thumbs and some have just
they
are
kill
incompetent about gardening. But, like, even when we use gardening as an example, if your plants aren't growing, we don't blame the plants. We blame the person who's in charge of the garden for being unable to grow the plants.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the NFL players and we label these early picks as bust, well, that's like blaming the plants for not growing instead of blaming the gardener. And that's my one problem with the bust label, is that we throw it at players. These organizations are bust more than the players are.
I mean, you look at, there's a history of people that get drafted early, get released, get cut, and all of a sudden surface on some other team and end up being a much better player than they were with the first team. Some of it might just be experience. They might be around a little longer, and they get better. But I think a lot of things is how the new group uses them, and especially a quarterback. I've seen a lot of guys surface with other teams and become a lot more valuable than they were with their first team.
Indeed. Well, on that note of this preseason game, I've been trying to tell y'all that Tampa is going to make a run towards the Super Bowl. And I know it was just a preseason game, but when you're right in the preseason, you just want to brag about it.
12-8, and you're going out for...
Yeah, but their starters were money. Like, Jameis Winston was 21 of 29, a buck 96. He was pretty accurate, although he did have a mistake in the game, and Dirk Cutter, after the game, was like, Jameis was great, except for that one play. But he did play really well, except for this one mistake. So, like, he was doing, I guess what they call that, the sandwich method, where you have one positive statement, then a negative, and then back to the positive. Doug Martin, he looking sharp. It's just frustrating that he's suspended for 3 games. And it's almost a pattern. Like, I'm tired of the, you know, Doug Martin, I'm all hyped, but he's suspended. And it's the pattern of DeMarcus Lawrence. You were hyped for him, but he was suspended. And Orlando Scandrick at one point was suspended. And Jay Ajayi was left home for a game. And it's like, wait a minute. I always get hyped for all these dudes, but stop letting me down. I want you to be out there and playing.
But isn't it a good sign for Martin just physically and with the painkillers or whatever he was hooked on, if he's playing well and looking good, does that hopefully mean that he's good? He's good to go himself?
I mean, he's, what, the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde running back, right? Mm-hmm. Like 1,400 yards in 2 years, and then his other 3 years haven't combined for 1,400 yards. So I hope we get the 1,400-yard Doug Martin instead of the, like, 2.5 yards per carry one. And Jeremy McNichols got a lot of run yesterday as well. Jonathan Moxie played, so it was a good day to represent Boise State.
We will be freezing for a reason again on Friday, September the 1st at Maverick in Nampa. Come on by and watch Chris and I, and then Caves and Prater broadcast from a beer cooler jammed with Coors Banquet beer. And for every case of Coors Banquet sold, the Wildland Firefighter Foundation will receive 25 cents. We'll be freezing for a reason Friday, September 1st on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. Troy is going to be Boise State's opener. It'll be a home game on the blue in the afternoon, 2 weeks from tomorrow. They won 10 games last year. How good are they going to be this year? Their voice, Barry McKnight, will tell us next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Bob and Chris back here on Idaho Sports Talk. We'll be here until 3 today. Coming up at 3, it'll be Caves and Prater to bring you home until 6 o'clock. Boise State, Troy, 2 weeks away from tomorrow. Barry McKnight is the voice of the Trojans. He's also a host of a talk show on Sports Radio 740 in Montgomery. We're pleased to welcome Barry to the show. Barry, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your time.
Fellas, I've been looking forward to this, and I surely have been looking forward to 2 weeks from tomorrow. That's absolutely true. I can't wait to get up there and see what transpires.
All right, Barry, if we were a caller, somebody calling into your show in Montgomery, what are the expectations for the Trojans? They won 10 games last year. Looks like they got a ton back, especially on offense. I mean, are you guys talking New Year's Six? What are you guys talking about at Troy?
Well, we're talking about a conference championship at least. You know, last year we won 10 games. That's the first time we've done that since Troy's been a Division I-A program. Won the bowl game, beat Ohio in Mobile. But we didn't, you know, we didn't factor into the conference championship, even though at one point Troy was 8-1 last year. And Troy, to this point, is still the only Sun Belt Conference team to ever get ranked in the top 25. All that happened last year, and that's great, but there was no conference championship. This year, like you said, after a 10-win season and a bowl championship, and with 98% of the offensive yardage back from last year, yeah, that's the next step for Troy, is to hoist a conference trophy, and so much of the season's impetus and so much of the season's expectations really is going to be springboarded by 2 weeks from tomorrow. Make no mistake about that.
You brought up so much returning and a lot of experience, including Brandon Silvers, who's talking about experience at the quarterback spot. What are some of his strengths?
Well, he just has been in the offense for 4 years. He's one of those rare guys. He came to Troy as a gray shirt, then a red shirt, then a four-year starter. So he's 24, and he's been in this offense, even though there has been a coaching change, the offense is still the same. He's been in this offense now for almost 6 years. He very rarely makes mistakes. He went down to the Manning Passing Academy in Louisiana over the summer, and you know, they judge him as being draft worthy. He's very solid in his decisions. In his freshman year, he set the NCAA record for completion percentage by a freshman, beating Sam Bradford's record at Oklahoma. He's very careful with the ball, very quick release. Troy rarely gets sacked. And probably his biggest strength is I liken him to a car dealer in Vegas. He's got a lot of people to deal the ball to around him, a lot of weapons returning, and he is very efficient at making sure the ball gets to the right place on time.
Barry McKnight is the voice of the Troy Trojans, also host on Sports Radio 740 in Montgomery, Alabama. Barry, when you look at this season for Troy, and you've told us about all these guys coming back, 98% of the yardage, quarterback in a fourth year starting, coming off a 10-win season, is there something that you think has to come through for this team to achieve what everybody there wants?
Well, two things, and both of them actually are on the defensive side of the football. On offense, everybody's back except our starting left tackle, who was drafted in the third round by the Patriots. Defensively, Troy loses every linebacker, literally. Every starting linebacker. They lost four guys to graduation from last year, and you've got to obviously have people step up at linebacker. There's some experience there, but not nearly what Troy had for the last couple of years. So they've got to identify two or three linebackers to go on the fringe, and also they've got to identify a pass rusher. You know, our leading pass rusher last year, a guy named Rashad Dillard, was the player of the year defensively in the Sun Belt Conference. He's gone. Got to figure out a way to get some pressure off the edge. There's a couple of guys and a couple of guys with different skill sets that Troy feels good about. But again, feeling good about them in the summer heat in Alabama in early August is nothing like feeling good about them on the blue turf coming up September 2nd. That's an entirely different set of expectations.
Barry McKnight, voice of the Troy Trojans, joining us here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Now, taking a look at the depth chart for Troy, and they have two positions that don't really have traditional titles. They have a spear and a bandit. And it just got me curious of what exactly does the defense look like, because even the guys listed at those positions kind of have different body types to them.
That's good. That's good. That's a good question. Our defensive coordinator is Vic Koning, who used to be the head coach at Wyoming back in the day. He's been a DC at Troy before. He's been at North Carolina recently and all that. What it will look like is hopefully not the same from snap to snap. That changes quite a bit. Those are hybrid positions. The spear is really a hybrid linebacker defensive back. You see that a little bit more. The spear is a play off the Trojan nickname. You'll see it often referred to as a buck or a rover or something like that. The bandit is a hybrid defensive end linebacker, and that's where Troy needs the push. They will line that bandit up sometimes in coverage, but most of the time on the line, and they'll switch sides with that. And again, depending on the down and distance and field position, the defense will look radically different in terms of pre-snap set virtually from play to play.
Last year, the team was 10-3, lost by 6 to eventual national champion Clemson. That was in week 2. And then a couple of other games. Arkansas State looks kind of like maybe a no-show at 35-3. And then a tough loss to Georgia Southern on the road, losing by 4. In the games that they did not play well, and I may be taking a look at Arkansas State and Georgia Southern, what was the Achilles heel last year for the Trojans?
Well, the difference last year was Troy kind of They kind of got winded right at the very end. You know, again, at one point they were 8-1. They were number 25 in the country. That Clemson game, I mean, that was there for the taking. There was a big non-call late on a fumble recovery, and there goes the ball game. But Troy kind of petered out late last year. In both of those games, they really were in it at halftime. Arkansas State was leading just 7-3 at halftime. And then they blew it out in the second half. But that coincided with an ankle sprain by our leading rusher, who's really the other keynote player on offense besides Silvers. His name is Jordan Chun. He's about 240 pounds. He ran for 1,200 yards last year, and he is just a load. He is one of those 25, 30 carry a game guys that you see maybe in a traditional I backfield, but in the spread offense, in the air raid offense that Troy runs, he has been devastating. He got hurt late, and the run threat sort of dissipated for Troy, and it was difficult to sustain drives, to get third downs converted, particularly in those games. But you mentioned the Arkansas State game, and Troy has had difficulties with them. That's one thing I think that plays into this one is it's a new coaching staff at Troy. Neil Brown is in his third year, but Troy has seen Brian Harsin before. Brian Harsin has seen Troy before, back at Arkansas State in 2013 in a whale of a ball game. So schematically, you know, I know the personnel is different, obviously, at Boise State, and the level of personnel is a notch above Arkansas State when Coach Harsin was there. But schematically, I don't think Boise State will do anything to surprise Troy. And I certainly think that Coach Harsin knows enough about Troy. The systems are pretty much the same, even though the coaches are different, that Troy's going to do, I don't think they're going to do much to surprise him and his staff. So it really seems to be compelling because there's no excuses. There's no surprises. It's going to be a whale of a ball game between two coaches who know how to move the football, and we'll just see how well they execute in week one.
Barry McKnight, voice of the Troy Trojans, joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. You know how it goes in college football. The teams that you play early in your schedule become your best friends later on because you want them to do well to help the strength of schedule. When it comes to the Sun Belt, you mentioned Arkansas State kind of being kind of a little bit of a pitfall for them traditionally, but what are some of the potential pitfalls and how do they stack up in that league?
Well, in the league, Troy was preseason picked second. There are three really separating teams in the league. There's Appalachian State, and that's Arkansas State, and that's Troy. Troy and Arkansas State play in the very last game of the regular season, and neither Troy nor Arkansas State play Appalachian State. A real key for Troy before you get to the end of the season, and again, they want to close better than they closed last year. In the first five games, Troy, again, goes to Boise State, but then 3 weeks later goes to LSU. And bear in mind, LSU is, you know, in a bit of a transitional stage. They've got Florida later on, a couple of weeks after Troy, the week after. So, you know, that Troy's kind of a look-ahead game possibly for LSU. And Troy has had a chance to beat LSU a couple of times down there. So if you can dream, if you can, you know, dust off your best dreams for the five-game stretch to start the year for Troy, if they can go 4-1, and I think they can, then that's a real springboard and catalyst for the rest of the year. I don't know where that one is, but a chance at four wins in the first five games, and things could really snowball for Troy at that point.
Well, we can guarantee you we'll be rooting hard for you guys at LSU to make that one of the wins. So last question for you, Barry. How many folks from Troy do you think might come?
Not many. Not many. You know, Idaho, the University of Idaho, is in the Sun Belt Conference. We've been up there a couple of times, and we know how long that trip is. There's not going to be, and there weren't many fans who came up for that. We're a small school in a small town. The enrollment's about 8,000, and, you know, in the state of Alabama, there are two huge juggernauts. But our fan base is outstanding. We get 25, 30,000 fans in a little town in the middle of nowhere, Alabama, and they are rabid and boisterous. But I think a lot of our fans are taking a pass on the Boise trip and making plans to hit New Orleans and Baton Rouge for that LSU trip. We're not going to have many, but I can guarantee you they'll be boisterous.
Barry, thanks so much for chatting. I know we'll get together as we get a little closer on before the game on the 2nd.
Can't express how much I'm looking forward to it, fellas. Thanks a bunch.
All right, Barry, thank you very much. That's Barry McKnight, voice of the Troy Trojans. They want to be 4-1. Alabama State, FCS school, you think they're going to get that one. New Mexico State on the road, they're usually not that good. They'll get that one. They play Akron at home, they'll probably get that one. So if they're going to go 4-1, they're either going to have to win here on the blue or they're going to have to win at LSU.
Well, it's got me to think of a strange scenario that could happen, and I'll set it up when we return, but what would happen if this thing were to occur would be curious to me.
All right. Call 208-424-9300. Be the third caller. You'll win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's on the northwest corner of Overland and Eagle to score lunch or dinner. Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or even just getting together with family and friends. Beef's has an award-winning menu and a huge video wall with big screen TVs. JP approves it. It's Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. Good food and good sports. Chris, tell us about a scenario. He's wondering if it might happen. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Thanks to Barry McKnight for joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris, we're here from 1 to 3 on 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. Chris, you had a scenario that, as you're explaining to me at the break, not that far-fetched. as far as wins and losses and what might happen in a New Year's Six situation.
Yeah, and just based on our conversation with Barry McKnight, kind of going through what Troy has on their schedule, and, you know, Boise State and Troy in the opener. Let's say Boise State wins that one. And let's say throughout the year, you know, Boise State has some tough non-conference games. Let's just, for the sake of this discussion, say they drop one against BYU and drop one against Washington State, and maybe they drop a game in the Mountain West but go on to win the league and win the conference championship game. So they're one of the teams that's, you know, available to pick in this pool here. Let's say Troy loses that game to Boise State in the opener but wins all the rest of their games, which, again, Barry McKnight saying that they have a team that can contend for the league title, and it's a league that at least has, you know, pretty good teams at the top. If they win all their league games, and also in their non-conference schedule, they have LSU there. Let's say, and again, Barry built the case why it's not unreasonable to think that Troy could beat LSU this year. So let's say their only loss this season is to Boise State in the first game. The Broncos win the league but have three losses on their resume. And let's say these are the two teams that have the best resumes for the New Year's Six. Who gets picked?
I would think a big question would be, who of the teams that you played, LSU on the winning side, on the Troy winning against them, and then say you say BYU and Washington State would go on the loss side?
Yeah.
I would say a lot might come down to what those teams did in their seasons. Was LSU a contender in the SEC, or were they 6-6 and weren't much of a factor? Did Washington State, did they beat Boise State and then go on to finish middle of the pack in the Pac-12? What kind of year did BYU have? On the surface, to me, there's two things that would be tough to separate. Yeah. You've got a head-to-head win, and especially, you know, I don't know, let's say Boise State won it by, you know, 10-20. They won fairly decisively.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'd have the case of, you could say, well, then they won 11 games in a row to close the regular season, including somebody from the SEC. I think I'd like to make that argument if I was for Boise State with just two losses and not three.
Yeah, like let's say, okay, they lose to BYU and Washington State but run the table in the league.
Correct.
Or they beat BYU and their only losses in the regular season to San Diego State other than Washington State. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess it kind of depends if you could build it with two. But with three, that'd be a really tough spot if you're picking. Because
very rarely does the two group of fives actually have a head-to-head.
Yeah, exactly. So you would think of that scenario, probably Troy would be ranked ahead, right? Because in a ranking system, a team that's won 11 games in a row and has an SEC win on there, like if you're doing this just by rankings, and technically that's how they do it, just by rankings, mm-hmm. who's ranked higher, you would think that Troy might be ranked higher. But then when you look at it from the head-to-head standpoint, wait a minute, we saw this game and Boise State beat them by two touchdowns in that first game of the year. Like, that's when you will start to kind of scratch your head and think, wait, why is Troy playing in this and not Boise State?
Troy's going to be somebody, especially if they win the Sun Belt, that's going to be in consideration for the New Year's Six. I think this game to open the season is huge for both sides. Huge. Bigger game, certainly, than you would expect when you look at two non-Power Fives going against each other in Week 1. Now let's go to Fish for an update.
This update is sponsored by Idaho Foot and Ankle Associates in Boise Meridian and Nampa. They measure success one foot at a time. Well, they can measure lots of success with feet today. The Boise State women's soccer team kicks off fall sports for the Broncos. Their season opener tonight on the turf field against Montana. Game kicks off at 5 p.m. The Broncos will then have another game Sunday on the turf field against Southern Utah.
I guess the biggest thing, Chris, is for people to know not to go to the Boaz Field. They've got some grass issues there. They're trying to bring it back, I think, from some funguses or something over the summer. So they have to go to the other one, which is sort of across from the Lincoln Garage.
Right next to Lincoln Garage, and that's where you can park, and you'll be able to just enter in a little code, and you should be all good to go. Step on over to the field and watch Boise State women's soccer open their season against a team that's always a contender in the Big Sky in Montana. And if you're looking for a local connection on their side, Montana's best player, Haley Widener, is a Rocky Mountain product. So, you know, you have Rocky Mountain product on Boise State, of course, is Ramey Shirley, who's, you know, a superstar in her first year. You have a Rocky Mountain product on the other side, too. So it should be a fun little matchup.
Well, speaking of Boise State products, the NFL last night, several were in action between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers won the game 12-8, but perhaps bigger news, now there's a quarterback controversy at Jacksonville. The Jags managed only 6 points on offense. The starters played into the second half, which saw Chad Henne take over for Blake Bortles after Bortles struggled in the first quarter. And after the game, Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone had this to say on the quarterback situation in Jacksonville.
I met with both quarterbacks afterwards. I told them what I'm looking for is I'm looking for someone that's going to lead this offense. So I'm not happy with the performance today. I'm not going to sit here and BS anyone. I mean, everyone saw it out there. Whatever you want to call it, I'm still trying to evaluate who the best person is at that position. I told that to both quarterbacks to lead the offense.
One issue there, Mr. Doug Marrone, the best quarterback was the third quarterback, Brandon Allen, who played a hell of a game until they just gave up play calling in the fourth quarter because it's a preseason game.
I just want to say this. If he's looking for a quarterback to stand up and be a playoff quarterback, it's not on your roster. Jacksonville is not making the playoffs. You can book that.
It just brought back all the memories, though, hearing Doug Marrone go on a rant like that. I got 4 years of Doug Marrone going on rants like that while I was at Syracuse. He was the coach.
Well, what was his record at Syracuse?
It was pretty good. Two bowl games in 4 years there, when Syracuse before that with Greg Robinson was just an awful disaster, bringing up two win seasons year after year. So Marrone did a good job with Ryan Nassib as his main quarterback. But I'll go back to Marrone when he was with the Bills. He had a chance to draft Ryan Nassib, his boy from Syracuse, and instead trade, I don't think it was a trade up, but picked EJ Manuel. So, like, I was out on Doug Marrone when he, dude, you got this job because of your success at Syracuse, because Ryan Nassib was your quarterback and was so good. Nassib was, you know, in the mix for being a first couple of rounds, maybe a first three rounds. He was in the same tier as EJ Manuel, and you put EJ Manuel in the first round.
And didn't
so what
Pete
are you doing?
But he's following Pete Carroll's lead. Didn't Pete Carroll take Golden Tate from Notre Dame over his receiver?
Yeah, maybe. So I guess you can say, if you can follow Pete Carroll's lead, it's not a bad thing. And maybe, like, Doug Marrone's like, yeah, I know what Ryan Nassib about as well as anybody, and I know he's not an NFL quarterback. But his evaluation of quarterbacks, I don't trust, because he picked EJ Manuel in the first round. So now I'm supposed to rely on him to be able to find a quarterback for Jacksonville? But I'm not benching Blake Bortles for no Chad Henne, because I know for sure Chad Henne ain't getting
me bench
anywhere.
Him for Brandon Allen. Brandon Allen looked amazing. I don't care if he's playing against the Scrubs.
What you want to do is you want the Jaguars to go with the Chris Lewis plan, lose as many games as possible, pick the worst quarterback to start so you can get Sam Darnold or whoever you deem is the best quarterback.
Right? Josh Allen. Ruin his career as well while you're at it. And won the sports update with ruining things. The Baltimore Ravens ruined two things last night in their 31-7 win over the Miami Dolphins. One, they ruined the debut of Jay Cutler. Cutler was 3-6 for 24 yards. He played two series before taking a hit on his shoulder that had been surgically repaired and removed as precaution. But really, what they ruined was a lot of fun in the preseason. The Ravens decided to turn down a request by kicker Justin Tucker, who wanted the team to allow him to attempt a 72-yard field goal to end the first half. Baltimore had the ball on their own 46-yard line. Instead, they would rather hand the ball off. Let's just get everyone injured, run a real play, instead of let somebody kick a 72-yard field goal. By the way, Tucker made a 70-yarder in practice at that game.
And if you really just want to run the half out, don't you take a knee?
Just take a knee. You're off. Now you make your offensive lineman engage in a block. You make your running back get tackled. Just take a knee if you're not going
to
kick.
You wanted to kick a 72-yarder. So what's the worst-case scenario? The Jaguars run it back?
That's what Tucker said. He said apparently the team was concerned. If I miss it, you got a bunch of linemen chasing a DB. Who cares?
Just let the DB preseason return it for a touchdown. It doesn't matter. You don't have. This is not Alabama Auburn where Iron Bowl's on the line.
Justin Tucker would have tackled that guy to prove himself because he recovered a fumble in the game already. So let him. Fire Harbaugh. Jim would have let him done it. John's too conservative. Fire him.
If you're the Bucks, what do you trade for Justin Tucker? Like, would you offer a first-round pick for Justin Tucker?
Well, aren't the Ravens in need of a running back? Aren't they having a running back competition? You have four of them on your roster. If you include Doug Martin, Jaquizz Rodgers, Sims, Barber, and McNichols, you have five running backs. I'd offer him at least three of them, and that may include McNichols. I'd give him my whole load of running backs except Doug Martin and one guy who could play the first three games.
I don't think I would give up a number one for Tucker. Tucker's very good. But
what is going to hold back Tampa from a possible playoff appearance?
A kicker. Come on, there's got to be somebody out there. Kickers get cut all the time.
Justin Tucker's about as money as it gets.
Well, maybe they could go to the Optimus Football Jamboree and find somebody to kick. That's coming up tomorrow at Albertson Stadium. You can tune into Sports Radio The Ticket for our live coverage. It'll go from 9 until noon. JP will be there, and it's brought to you by our friends at Domino's. You'll have results and interviews. Again, the Optimus Jamboree tomorrow from 9 to noon on your FM home of Boise State Football, Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up next, we've got Quick Hits, where Chris and I will give you four topics in rapid-fire fashion. Chris is going to talk about whose birthday it is today, and I'm going to talk about who is now going all in. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. topic number one.
All right, Chris, can this be possible? Could a player win comeback player of the year 2 years in a row?
Sounds ridiculous, right?
It does, doesn't it?
Because, like, if you came back, like, wait a minute, how are you going to be comeback player of the year again the next year if you just were on the come up the year before? I bring this up because the NBA came out with their Players Association Awards today, and Joel Embiid won the comeback player of the year. He was fantastic in 31 games this season. If he comes back next year and plays 70 games and puts his averages up, playing a little bit more minutes to like 26 points a game, 10 rebounds, and 3 blocks, like, can you give him the comeback player of the year? Because he's coming back from a year where he only played 31 games, so now he's playing 70 games and is exponentially better. Like, there's a crazy scenario on the board where a guy could win comeback player of the year 2 years in a row.
I don't think so. I think there'd be enough people that would look at it and say he won it last year. I'm not voting for him.
Topic number two.
He's going for MVP, though, anyway. Who has pressure tonight?
Fellow by the name of Jordan Montgomery, left-handed pitcher for the Yankees. Big series tonight, 3 games between the Yankees and Red Sox at Fenway. Boston is up 4 in the standings. Last weekend, they won 2 out of 3 in New York. New York has to have 2 out of 3 this weekend. And I'm looking at Saturday, and I'm saying no way Saturday. Chris Sale pitching for the Red Sox. CC Sabathia coming back from injury for the Yankees. I don't see that one. So I think Jordan Montgomery has to pitch maybe the game of his life. Pitched pretty well last Sunday. Kept the Yankees in the game, giving up a run in 5 1/3 innings. But it's getting late for New York. They've got to have 2 out of 3. And if you're not beating Sale, Montgomery better start him off on the right track.
Yeah, Chris Sale could be Cy Young Award winner, so you got to kind of take that game out of it. And I was like, the Red Sox are just better, which is weird because the run differential wouldn't tell you that they're better. The Yankees have a better run differential, but it looks like the Red Sox are just more stable.
Yankees, though, coming in on a 4-game winning streak, 4-game sweep over the Mets, and the Yankee Twitter account
calling
out the Mets and telling them we're gonna spank you.
Yeah, they got some stunting on there. So maybe the Yankees can prove me wrong because I do think they have, the keys. Aaron Judge, come on, turn it around. Help the race out a little bit.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, whose birthday is it today? I know it's not mine. I know it's not yours. I don't think it's Fish's.
It's not any of those birthdays. Instead, it is a birthday to a legend. Somebody who has athletic achievements that are out of this world. In fact, he might have been the first pick in the draft in every pickup game that he's ever been in, and it doesn't matter what the sport is. We're talking about Pablo Sanchez. Who's Pablo Sanchez? It's Pablo Sanchez from the Backyard Sports Series. I remember playing this game on the computer back in the day. For whatever reason, they give these guys like a full profile, including a birthday, and Pablo Sanchez's birthday is 8/18. Like, his speed was off the charts. Like, that helped him in no matter what sport he was playing. And backyard baseball, which I think was the most popular one of the bunch. Like, he was a great batter. He could run. You could even put him at pitching. He was also an excellent fielder. Like, he was the ultimate utility guy before utility guys. Pablo Sanchez is the number one.
Never heard of him.
Topic number 4.
Fish, you got to know a little something about Pablo Sanchez before we get to
it. I remember it, and I always would go to my friend's house to play backyard baseball, and he never let me in on who this Pablo Sanchez guy was. I just kept wondering why I kept getting my butt kicked every single game until I finally figured it out.
I think they had a guy named Ernie who was like a real tall black dude, and I would always pick him to be my receiver. It's like, just throw it up to like Calvin Johnson. It's like, Ernie, throw it up to him. All right, who's going all in? Fourth quick hit.
North Carolina. Last 2 days, they've been at the NCAA Committee on Infractions hearings over bogus classes, and they're trying to defend the fact that they are not improper benefits and they shouldn't have lack of institutional control. There were some classes in the Afro-American Studies Department that the NCAA is claiming that through their knowledge, the athletic department was able to get athletes in to get their grade point average up. But North Carolina is denying that the athletes got the benefits because they said the classes were available to anybody and the athletes actually were a lower percentage of students than the rest of the student body. They claim it's an academic matter and the NCAA doesn't have jurisdiction of it. The reason why I say they're going all in, original notice from the NCAA had the extra benefits clause in there. The second notice did not, had some things on the side, but not the extra benefits and not the lack of institutional control. When they said they wanted to fight that because of what I said earlier, they decided to go all in. The NCAA decided to go all in and put the lack of institutional control back on the table. And that means you could lose a national championship.
This thing's still a thing? My gosh. How long has this North Carolina thing been going on? Like, really, 5 years? 6 years?
I'd say so, yeah.
7 years? Let's figure this out.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
I think their defense is interesting. It's academic, so it doesn't matter. It's the academic side of things. I don't know. I have people say that they're going to win that, and I have other people say, no, they're going to get hammered.
How much, like, the lawyers involved on both sides, how much money have they made with this?
The meter's running, and they're doing quite well.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're just getting the check after check after check. This thing's been going on for way too long.
Fish Tank next.
Well, if you've been following me on Twitter, at TheFishKTIK, you'll know I watched a lot of preseason last night. I got two things that I got to fix with the NFL. Plus, I'm about to make Bob a very happy man when it comes to baseball. That's coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's The Fish Tank with Michael Fisher.
And don't forget, you can make The Fish Tank a fan tank by texting us your outrageous opinions at 424-9300.
On Sports Radio The Ticket.
That's right, it is time for a fish tank. And this all stems from last night. As a good Boise State fan, I was watching Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Jacksonville Jaguars take on each other in a preseason game. And oh my, did that game drag on. It made me realize something. The preseason, what's the worst part? The injuries. Torn ACLs. And then when you get to the second half, the coaches don't care. I saw Jacksonville run back-to-back goal line fades with third and one from the two-yard line. We need to make NFL preseasons 10-minute quarters. The extra 5 minutes does nothing for anyone. If your starters are complaining that they're not getting enough time in the preseason, that should tell you all you need to know about your starters. If they need more preseason time, you're in trouble. No point of the extra game helps. You just increase injuries. You increase the time of third-string guys playing who eventually will be cut anyway, unfortunately. So, Chris Lewis, sink or swim, NFL preseason games need to go down to 10-minute quarters.
I'm going to tread water. I'm not going to completely seek it because my idea is even more radical than yours. I just want to get rid of the quarter structure and the regular game structure of the preseason. They don't need to be regular games. Why can't you have, like, instead of a 60-minute game, have 5 10-minute sessions where, like, at the end you have the 2-minute warning at these sessions, so you're getting more reps at the 2-minute drill, which teams need, and that way you have a more clean break of, okay, this was the score when our starters were in with the first team, and now let's reset the counter, and we can reset the score 0-0 and have our second session and see how these guys do, how this backup unit does, and now we can reset it again for the third stringers and see how they do. Why do we have a game structure for it at all?
Because I don't want to watch people practice.
It's
I want to watch the NFL.
But it's live game action, but it's also structured in a way that makes more sense.
Can they hit the quarterback?
Yes, you can hit the quarterback. Everything's live game except for the structure of it. So what is that, a sink or a swim?
Like, I'm going to say it's a swim because you're trying to change the preseason.
There you go. I eventually get to the swim.
I want to swim with him because I like that. I hadn't thought of that, but that's like a controlled scrimmage.
Yeah.
Where you get to see what you want. You get couple goal line situations you could put out there. You give both teams a chance 2 minutes at the end of the half. I mean, it's not a real game, but these things aren't real games anyway.
Exactly.
Do you really care if you're 4-0 in the preseason?
Do you look at the score?
You know, we were talking about a trophy for the baseball, you know, President's Cup, if you will.
Yeah.
Do they give a trophy if you go 4-0 in the preseason?
Nah, but they apparently give a trophy for Summer League, which I learned this year when the Lakers won it, and there was a trophy presentation, and Magic Johnson's like, the Lakers are back! I'm like, this means less than the preseason in the NFL! Why are you getting a trophy, and why is Magic Johnson saying the Lakers are back?
Who's the worst organization in the NBA? Historically,
it's the Clippers.
Okay, would they put up that banner in their arena?
No! Not even the Clippers would put that up. The Clippers are a train wreck historically. So, you don't need to keep any kind of a regular game structure with the preseason.
But in fairness to Fish, I think what you're saying is, why do we need to see an interminable 3.5 hours?
Yes.
And
like I said,
there's things that don't really matter in the fourth quarter.
Chris just enhanced my idea. Mm-hmm. He took my idea and enhanced it. That means it's a swim.
Mm-hmm. Up one, then two.
And speaking of the Jaguars, watching that game, we all saw it. Blake Bortles basically demoted on live TV. Now there's a quarterback competition. And they mentioned it during the broadcast. The Jaguars owe Blake Bortles $6 million this year, whether they like it or not, because of the draft. And next year, they'll have a fifth-year option available for $19 million. I'm not sure they'll pick that up, but at least it's an option. It got me thinking. Right now, NFL contracts are structured for rookies. Your first-round pick, your four-year deal, plus a one-year team option. Rounds 2 through 7, your four-year deals. The later the round, the less guaranteed money you get. Rookie contracts need to be 1 year shorter. 5 years is absolutely ridiculous because right now you can see Jacksonville's basically stuck paying Blake Bortles. They don't have a choice. He gets $20 million for 4 years, and they're stuck paying it. And he's a terrible quarterback, and they can't get rid of him. So I think we need to do a structure of the first-round pick. You get 3 years plus a fourth option if they're really good. Benefit teams who draft well, teams who draft poorly, like the Jaguars. They can get out of these bad contracts sooner and start over. 2 through 7, we'll stick with 3 rounds. And for rookies, it opens you up to your first contract sooner as opposed to running backs who don't get a chance at their first real contract till they're 25. So, Bob, sink or swim, rookie contracts all need to go down a year from 4 plus 1 to 3 plus 1 and so on.
My first question before I give the answer, are you generally a glasses half full guy or a glasses half empty guy?
I like to be a glass half full guy.
See, I don't think so by what you're projecting, because if I have Jameis Winston, I don't want him to get to free agency a year earlier. So if I'm a smart team and a team that's making my picks correctly, I don't want to see this thing happen. So I'm going to sink this. I think that the good teams, and everything obviously goes from the team's perspective, because the players' union's so bad that they won't have a chance to negotiate anything good for the players. So we're talking about it from the team's perspective. If I have a good player, I don't want to see this thing get shorter. The handful of teams that are bad, that's their problem. So I'm going to sink it.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you've built the case from the team's perspective, like the team will want to get out. But yeah, I'm with Bob on this, where the last thing the teams want is the rookie contracts to be 1 year shorter, which means they have to start handing out those gigantic contracts a year sooner. Like, that's the thing with the, especially the quarterback ones, like the ones who hit, like Jameis Winston is technically still on that first deal. If that were a thing, you would be up for renegotiation now, and they'd try to extend that long-term deal, like the Andrew Luck one that he got recently, and that's salary cap problems a year earlier than you would have in the situation otherwise. So yeah, I'm going to sink this, because hey, from the player's perspective, who has to swim it? Because I usually look at it from a player's perspective of like, hey, what's best for them? What gets them the money? But, yeah, I'm going to sink it. I just don't think it makes sense from the team's point of view.
See, the Bucs would be on board until Winston retires, and then they draft a bad quarterback, and they're stuck with him for 4 years. It ebbs and flows.
They're not making that much anymore. You can draft a second quarterback at this point. Like, it used to be when it was Sam Bradford's rookie year, and I think Matthew Stafford might have been one of the last of the huge contract rookies where, all right, you were really stuck then. You could not have that dead money around. Now the contracts aren't that big, relatively speaking, so you can survive it.
Finally, we'll get to baseball. Yesterday, painstakingly, we made Bob talk about the Dodgers, how great they are. They could win 160 games. I've got good news for you, Bob, at least from the Fishers' perspective in my tank right here. The Dodgers should not even be considered World Series favorites in the NL. That should go to the Washington Nationals. And the biggest reason is, yes, I know the Dodgers traded for Yu Darvish. Who's going to start Game 3 for the LA Dodgers? Alex Wood, whose best season before this year was 8-8. Brandon Morrow, a career journeyman. So right now, I look at the Nationals. You've got Strasburg, you've got Scherzer, and you've got Gio Gonzalez, who, oh, by the way, is the best home ERA in baseball at 2.49. Right now, the Dodgers cannot match up in a three-game series. You can have Kershaw, and Darvish can cancel out two of them. Game 3, that's a penciled in loss. Chris, you made the argument yesterday, well, the Nationals, they don't have a bullpen. Bullpens winning in the postseason is a year-to-year argument, and it really didn't start until the Royals did it all. Besides Mariano Rivera, the Yankees' bullpen wasn't that dominant, and finally the Dodgers relying on two rookies, well, one rookie in Bellinger and another guy in Chris Taylor, who before this year hit 207 last year in extended time with the Dodgers, this year hitting 303. We look what happened with Aaron Judge. He's back hitting 186. So, Chris, sink or swim, the Nationals should be the World Series favorite in the NL, not the Dodgers.
I'm going to sink in principle, because you can't have a team win 116 games and not be the favorite. They have to earn, I mean, they have the burden of being the favorite. Like, when you win 116, which is like what they're on pace to do, you're going to have to deal with the weight of expectations, and you're going to have to deal with the fact that we're all going to clown on you if you lose. And even though I don't like clowning on losers like that, because I value the regular season more than other people do, what will we do as a sports society? We set you up in the regular season and hold that success against you and laugh at you if you don't come through in the playoffs. Your case for the Nationals was fine, but if they were really that good, why aren't they better than the Dodgers right now? Like, you know, the Dodgers are significantly better than the Nationals if they were really a better team. But how much does being a favorite matter? I mean, the weight is in this piece of paper I'm holding up. The weight doesn't matter at all. It's you're the favorite or you're the underdog in the baseball postseason. It's a roulette wheel. Spin it. Might be 22 black. Might be 11 red. Who knows what it'll be?
Bob?
I'm going to sink it as well. I think the Dodgers should be the favorite. I agree with Chris. I don't know that they'll be heavy favorites over the Nationals and the Cubs. I have questions about the Nationals with Harper. If Harper's injury really goes into the postseason or is longer than they expect, I think that that will change the complexion of the Nationals team. I think Jansen for the Dodgers is better at the back end than anybody the Nationals are going to trot out there. And then take it from me. Watching a lot of giant playoff games in the late 90s and early 2000s, you don't want Dusty Baker calling the shots in the postseason. Go with the Dodgers over the Nationals.
Do we even know what Dave Roberts is as opposed
to? I don't, but I'm willing to take whatever's behind
unless,
the door.
Unless he's gone.
Let's make a deal, I'm trading for behind the curtain, not knowing what's behind the curtain.
Mariano Rivera's not pitching. There's no Dave Roberts magic.
Did Dave Roberts do anything significantly last year that made you think he was a great postseason manager?
No, but he also didn't screw anything up either. They lost to a better team in the Cubs.
We were criticizing his moves of when he was using Kershaw. Remember that first round they used, was it Jansen was their closer last year? They used him like the sixth inning against the Nationals and then had Kershaw like kind of close out that game. We were critical.
I meant they had no confidence in anybody else.
We were critical of Dave Roberts a little bit last year.
But it worked out. He won that round. I don't know. I think it'll be the Dodgers in the National League. But who knows? The Cubs may not even win their division.
Yeah, the Cubs are still in the dogfight here.
So it's got to be a few more months to be played. Dodgers looking good, but we'll both sink that. Coming up next, can you imagine Hawks Memorial Stadium hosting a major league game? You can tune in Sunday to see something that's darn close. We'll tell you about that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Back on Idaho Sports Talk, Bob and Chris will be here until 3. Caves and Prater will take over here on 93.1 Sports Radio, The Ticket, then and bring you home until 6. Little League World Series is going on in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and the Sunday night Major League game between the Pirates and Cardinals is being moved to the small central Pennsylvania city. They're going to play the game at the minor league stadium. Williamsport is a short season Class A like Boise. So how did they get it done? How did they get a major league game into a minor league park? Gabe Sinacropi, who was the vice president of the Williamsport Crosscutters, tells us how it happened.
Well, it really was the brainchild of Major League Baseball and Little League Baseball. This is a partnership between the two of them to promote youth baseball and softball for participation, which, of course, you know, has been waning a bit over the years. So that's what this game is 100% about.
Now, you guys are hosting it. People here in Boise can draw a direct correlation with the Boise Hawks short season Class A, Williamsport Crosscutters short season Class A. They're a Phillies team. So how did you guys get a minor league park up to major league specifications?
Well, it's been crazy and a lot of fun. This idea started to hatch in, last August. So it's something that's been worked on now for 12 months. And, yeah, some things had to be brought up to major league standards on a permanent basis, and a whole lot of things brought up to major league standards on a temporary basis. So with the fact that they were looking to bring this major league game in, Bob, the first thing that the MLB people were looking at is the playing surface. And while we had a very good playing surface, it's not a major league quality playing surface. And so they said, look, we will come in and totally start over again with the field. And that's exactly what they did. That started in April, the beginning of April, where they just tore everything up and dug down a few feet and, you know, just refilled it and did everything that's needed to be done to have a major league quality surface, including new drainage, new irrigation, the field, moving. We're a 91-year-old stadium, as you know, moving the bullpens, which were still in foul territory like they used to be at Wrigley Field, moved them back behind the outfield fences. So that's what Major League Baseball did in a nutshell. And that was to the tune of about $1.5 million to put in that new playing surface and move the bullpens. So then there was a whole lot of other things that just kind of coalesced because of the possibility of this game coming here. We were in the middle of a big construction project, $1 million premium deck that was being built down our right field line. But in this offseason, with the possibility of what was going to be taking place here, a lot of things just broke for us. We've had in the state legislature a grant application for what's called an RCAP grant here in Pennsylvania for $1.5 million. That thing was going nowhere. When wind started flying about this Major League game possibility, boom, the governor passed it at $1.25. When people walk in, once they get to the top of the ramp and look in the stadium, it's 100% new. So a lot of things happened to make this game come about and to make $4 million in permanent renovations to our field happen.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. Gabe Sinacropius joining us. He is the Vice President of Marketing for the Williamsport Crosscutters. Little League World Series going on in Williamsport, PA, as is the Major League game Sunday night with the Cardinals and the Pirates. The crowd's going to be different. Very young, correct? Isn't that the idea?
The idea is to fill the stadium with young people, with kids, with Little League players. So the first order of business is all 16 of the Little League World Series teams to be in attendance, and they will be, along with their coaches, along with their parents. Some local Little Leagues also getting tickets. So, you know, our stadium now, it used to be 4,000 after the renovations. We've what I call right-sized the stadium for the size of our market. We now seat about 2,500 fans. So It's going to be filled up mostly with kids. That's what you're going to see on TV. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of adults here as well. But you're talking about a Major League game with in the vicinity of 2,500 to 3,000 people attending. So it's going to be a pretty cool experience.
Now, here's somebody who's been around the game of baseball for a while. What do you think is it about the game of baseball that keeps this connection with childhood? Because, like, this doesn't happen in any other sport. Like, in basketball, you wouldn't, like, go back to where you were, you know, go back to where there's a lot of 12-year-olds who play and try to put on a show like that. So what is it about the game of baseball that keeps this connection to youth?
For whatever reason, you know, we all grew up playing baseball in the backyard. And possibly if you're lucky enough to have a team around you, which, you know, about 80% of America does. You go to games, and what we do, what we say we do, is create memories. I mean, it's a great memory of going to an outdoor sporting event with your mom or dad, your grandfather, your aunts or uncles. And those are things that, for whatever reason, I don't know exactly why, but we remember them all our life. And, you know, you remember playing Little League baseball. And that's why people watch the Little League World Series. It's one of the most popular events that ESPN puts on every year. It's one of their most profitable events that they televise. That's why they keep doing it and pay rights fees of tens of millions of dollars to do it. It's one of their most successful programs. So, you know, I don't know. It's just those memories that we always have, and it always makes us smile to think of baseball and certainly baseball in our youth.
Gabe Sinacropi joining us on Idaho Sports Talk. He's in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. In addition to being an executive with the minor league team, the Crosscutters, also serves as a public address announcer for the Little League World Series, which people will be watching starting this weekend. Gabe, what is it like there? What might somebody in Boise that sees on TV, what might they not see that's live there? What makes it such a special event?
Well, what makes, I think, Bob, the Little League World Series so special, let's say extra special, is it's not being held in a big city. It's not at Disney World or in New York City or in Los Angeles. It's in little Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And, you know, that just helps conjure up those thoughts and those good time memories that we just talked about. That's what makes this special. In addition to, you know, these kids playing a game that they love, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that it's in this really neat place, this little valley in central Pennsylvania, and that it happens year after year here. But, you know, something that the fans don't see on TV is just the enormity of the ESPN production that goes on there. I mean, they are working there around the clock with a staff of literally hundreds to put on these games all day, all night for 10 days. And it's really special. And now we kind of have that same thing happening here at historic Bowman Field with, you know, everything that has been put up here on a temporary basis. It's pretty exciting.
Is there any concern, though, as the event gets bigger, and it seems like it does every year, more television coverage, does it become, like, more corporate? Is there anything to kind of protect from that? Like, as events get bigger, they typically lose that element of special and uniqueness to it.
Well, Chris, you know what? I mean, yes, that's talked about every year, and it will be talked about again this year. You know, oh, all these games are televised. They're on ESPN. These kids are put in front of this national TV audience, and it isn't right. I think that, you know, number one, Little League is very protective of the children. Number two, from my standpoint, society has changed an awful lot from, you know, 1970 to 2017. It's a different day. It's a different age. Our kids, you know, live and breathe media, all types of media. And I don't think that, you know, in some corners they say, oh, they're being taken advantage of or this or that, or, you know, Little League has this huge multi-million dollar rights agreement with ESPN. Well, that money goes to make Little League incredibly affordable for the kids who play it. You know, the leagues don't have to really pay a lot of money, if any, for insurances and things of this nature, which makes joining a league incredibly, incredibly inexpensive. If there were no TV contract, if there were no national sponsors, you'd have kids paying literally hundreds of dollars to play in a sanctioned little league, you know, during the spring or summer. So, you know, that's where the bulk of that money goes. And, you know, I see firsthand being there all the time during the World Series, and I've been part of it since 1999, the steps that Little League goes to protect, you know, the kids from various things.
Great event, the Little League World Series. A lot of fun watching it right now here in the studio. You can win a table for four at Dave & Buster's to watch the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Register at KTIK.com right now for you and three buddies to watch the fight in style, complete with appetizers and beverages. Hit KTIK.com to win a VIP table for the fight right now. Fish, we got an update coming up. What's in it?
Well, the start for fall sports on Boise State campus happens today, plus a 25-game suspension for LeBron. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
And we'll start the Ticket Sports Update with some Boise State news. The Boise State women's soccer team will kick off fall sports for the Broncos today. Their season opener is tonight on the turf field against Montana. That kicks off at 5 p.m. The Broncos have another game Sunday on the turf field. That'll be against Southern Utah.
Fall season is here, even though it feels like summer.
And again, it's not the normal soccer field. It's the one right across from Lincoln Garage. The other one, they're doing some maintenance. So they're beginning the season on the alternate field.
And speaking of beginning the season, Boise State football starts in 2 weeks against Troy. We spoke to Barry McKnight, the voice of Troy, earlier today, and he said this is the expectations for Troy going into the season.
Well, we're talking about a conference championship at least. You know, last year we won 10 games. That's the first time we've done that since Troy's been a Division I-A program. Won the bowl game, beat Ohio in Mobile. But we didn't, you know, we didn't factor into the conference championship.
Kind of sounds like Boise State a little bit. Had a good season, won 10 games, but didn't win the conference championship. I could have said the same thing on his show.
Maybe you will at some point down the line. Who knows how it'll go? There's similar positions, right? Like, you know, they return more than Boise State does.
Mm-hmm.
Like they
have, especially on offense.
Yeah, they have all their skill guys back, their ball carriers back, their quarterbacks like older than me. Basically, when he's 24. Yeah, I'm 26. So basically, you got the elder statesman at quarterback over there. Won't be an easy game. I think the more we learn about Troy, the more you realize how the opener will be a tightly contested game, most likely.
And speaking of the big news, we talked about it going to the update. LeBron, 25-game suspension for violation of the drug program. That would be Lewis LeBron, catcher for the Mets minor league team. That would be props to shout out Chris Lewis. That Chris Lewis tweet brought that to my attention. So LeBron's been suspended. It's just Lewis LeBron, not LeBron James.
You are correct, but everybody would assume that we'd be talking about another LeBron.
2017, you got to check your sources. You got to check your sources. I'm just trying to teach people, check your sources.
LeBron, one-name athlete, and sadly, by association, anybody else who has that name, your name will be attached to it. Yeah, according to Anthony DeComo, yeah, Mets minor league catcher, 25 games without pay. I think his 25 games without pay is a little less money than LeBron James being suspended 25 games without pay.
Just a little bit. Just a small bit. But speaking of the Mets minor leagues, I got to bring it up. Tim Tebow now batting .222, currently mired in a 1-for-22 slump.
Ooh.
I don't know if he's going to see the majors at this point. Come on, Tebow. You're hitting .300 at one point.
Is that like Aaron Judge? They're on the same kind of plane here. They just struggling since the home run derby.
I don't know if Tebow was invited to the home run derby. He has 5 home runs. He has struck out in, let's see, about 8 consecutive games at least once. So he's on his way to Judge territory.
I would be shit. You know, I thought maybe at the beginning of the year that, you know, the Mets will probably be out of the race, which is true. And I thought they'd bring him up, but I don't think they can bring him up now. His numbers don't even make it look close enough.
What, you thought numbers would have something to do
with
it?
Well, I mean, I thought if he did something. I mean, I thought he'd
have jersey sale numbers.
Well, that's true.
Those numbers are probably high. Those are the numbers that they want to pay attention to. Yo, the Mets just the other day had a guy play third base, second base, 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 third base in a game. You think they're above slideshows?
Tebow could do that, and he wouldn't have to change positions. But we'll see. Speaking of things you can't get rid of and eyesores, the Miami Marlins have that atrocity out in center field, their home run statue. Well, if Derek Jeter and the new group wants to get rid of it, they won't be allowed. The Miami Herald saying that they spoke to the county and it said that was designed specifically for the project. Speaking of the home run statue, it is permanently installed and not movable.
Oh,
so you can't get rid of that home run statue.
Come on, blow it up.
I mean, you can blow up half the stadium and you wouldn't notice a drop in attendance. So.
I mean, I don't know what Marlins Park is not that old. It can't be like a, you know, a historical site where it deserves to be preserved. I don't know. I would guess they know what they're talking legally, but that's stupid.
I have no comment on the removal of any kind of statue. It's too hot of a topic right now.
I think the Marlins just wish Stan keeps hitting home runs and it breaks. Well, Chris, I know something you do want to talk about last night because somehow both of you are happy with this result. The Giants defeated the Phillies 5-4. Start their 4-game series. Now have a 4-game lead over being the worst team in baseball. Continues this weekend. Bob's happy the Giants won. Chris, somehow you're happy your team lost because you're a fake fan.
Nah, man. It's like, as long as Odubel Herrera keeps playing well, good for him. But, like, the last thing I want to do is have a season that was as bad as this and then not have it be the number one pick because they decided to win a few games at the end of the year against the Giants. Like, you know, the season's this season. It's already basically over. The last thing you need to do is to, you know, get rid of the one reward you get for having a year this bad.
I, on the other hand, watched the game. Decided to watch that over NFL preseason.
That's a good choice.
Great play for the Giants. Denard Span was nearly passed up by Hunter Pence in a great play. The two touched home plate within about a second of each other. Exciting game, good win for the Giants.
I think everyone was just excited because all the headlines I saw said Pence nearly eclipses Span.
Ha ha. All the eclipse in the way of conversation. Look at that. They're squeezing it in.
Speaking of things that some people say there's too many of, there's not too many eclipses, but some people argue there's too many bowl games. Well, the St. Petersburg Bowl has earned a new place in my heart as the best bowl game, perhaps. And that is because they've now changed their name for about the fourth time in 6 years. They're now going to be known as the Bad Boy Mower Gasparilla Bowl.
And I look, Gasparilla is a parade. It's a festival in Tampa on the other side of the bay. So they eliminate the name St. Pete, even though the game's still going to be played in St. Pete. But Bad Boy Mower, I think, is right there with the Pool and Weed Eater when they sponsored the Independence Bowl in Shreveport.
Yo, Gasparilla looks lit. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures or videos of Gasparilla, but that looks like it's a time over there. I got some family in Tampa, so they're very familiar with the Gasparilla. Now, Bad Boy Mower, does Diddy get any money from this? You know, he goes Bad Boy Records.
I doubt it.
Puff Daddy, whatever you're going
Bad Boy
these
Mowers
days.
Might be a company that's been in business longer. They might be getting money back from him.
From Diddy? Uh-oh. Diddy got a lot of money you can get from, too.
Also, my favorite part of this whole thing, they plant an artificial turf.
Oh, really?
You can't even use the bad
boy.
Yeah, you can't use the Bad Boy Mowers to show off. It's a good and a bad thing. One, they can't mess up the field. But you can't say, look at this field that's been cut by the Bad Boy Mowers. It's part of the Bad Boy Mower Gasparilla Bowl.
Reminds me of my favorite story is that, you know, the two places where I spent a lot of time, colleges, Boise State and Syracuse. The Syracuse Arena is called the Carrier Dome, but it doesn't have air conditioning. But it does have Taco Bell inside. Taco Bell Arena has air conditioning, but it doesn't have any Taco Bell inside. So it's we need some matches here.
Is that better or worse than having a Chick-fil-A in the new Falcon Stadium that isn't open on game day?
Yeah, that's true. Also bad.
We will be freezing for a reason again on Friday, September 1st at Maverick in Nampa. Come on by and watch us. That's me and Chris from 1 to 3, and then Cage and Prater from 3 to 6. Broadcast from a beer cooler jammed with Coors Banquet beer. For every case of Coors Banquet sold, the Wildland Firefighter Foundation will receive 25 cents. We'll be freezing for a reason. Friday, September 1st on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. On Monday, Chris and I, we sometimes are in the dark. We'll really be in the dark on Monday, as will you. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Usually at this time, we go over what we've learned today on Idaho's Sports Talk, brought to you by, with Bob and Chris. It's brought to you by and sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. But today, we're going to shed some light when there'll be no light. That will be Monday. There is an eclipse. It's coming through Boise, according to USA Today. It'll start around here at a 10-11. Closest thing we'll get to a full eclipse here in Boise is 11-27. Idaho Falls gets the full eclipse about 11-35. And then we're back in sunshine at 12-50, just in time for us to give you the light on our show. But what are you guys doing for the eclipse? It's coming up on Monday.
I feel like this hype has gotten nuts. Like, I feel like there's going to be just a bunch of t-shirts. Everybody's selling stuff to be associated with it. People are coming apparently from all over the place. My mom even thought about coming out. My mom hasn't been to Boise yet. I've been here like for 4 years and she hasn't come, but she even thought about, oh, this eclipse thing's going on.
So so now my question is, what are we going to have to do to entice her to Boise? If the eclipse is going to do it.
Well, she couldn't get off of work and, you know, she's busy. She has to, you know, be the greatest mom in the world, and that, you know, takes a lot of time. So if people are coming out, though, I don't feel like I could do anything for it, because if I have to be on the air at 1 o'clock and there's signs already on all these roads about solar eclipse Monday, plan ahead, you expect the roads to be full with traffic, can I even go anywhere? And this thing is supposed to end around, you know, or begin, as Fish gave you the stats, that 11 o'clock hour, and expect to be able to get somewhere and get back here in time for it. So am I just stuck to be going outside the studio, putting on some weird looking glasses and watch this thing?
I think that's what I'm going to do. Go out on the porch here in the front of our building here at 14th and Bannock and just watch it there, because I think you're right. I think with the number of people who are coming from out of state, and then you put all the people in state that want to get to a better vantage point than Boise. Places like Stanley, McCall, a little further north of here are going to be great, you know, almost completely dark up at those places. Here, what's going to be about, 95%? That's going to be really dark. I mean, I think we're still going to get a great show here in Boise, seeing what 95% would be.
Yeah, though that's my thing with this is, like, is it a great show that it's dark? Will it feel, oh, cool, it's dark in the middle of the day? Or, like, you know, shooting stars, you at least, like, see stars move across. And then my other question is, what happens if you don't have glasses? Because I have
don't stare at the sun.
I've been consistent with it. This is the same tactic they used with Y2K. Right? Oh, you need to back up your stuff. You need to go and buy this software. You need to go ahead and make sure your computer systems don't fall apart when the year goes to 2000. This model wasn't built for it, so you better buy all this stuff to protect your investment. And guess what? Nothing happened. It wasn't even a
thing. I think I'm going to go with them. Don't look straight at the sun.
So you believe these
scientists? I believe that one, yes.
These scientists don't know. They're trying to scare you.
What are you, Kyrie Irving? The earth is flat and you can look at the sun now?
Why not? Yeah. I mean, I don't ever wear sunglasses very much anyway, so now I have to... They're not that expensive, are they?
I mean, I'm sure they're getting more expensive. I think $6 or so.
$6?
We're going to have some listeners call in on Monday, especially ones that might have gone places. Like, tell us what the crowd was like, where they were, what it was like, how dark.
Well, this is good practice for you, right, Chris? You're normally on Bronco postgame. Eclipse post game Monday at 1.
Just get all the calls and bring in a bunch of science experts. And what did we see? What we expected to see? Was it overrated? Just like some elements of the football team could be overrated at times. Yeah. Or
what was underrated?
Surprised? Who was the breakthrough performer of this? So all those angles, do they even make sense? I have no idea. But is this is like a once in a 20-year type of thing?
No, 1918 or 1916 was the last time.
Wow. Well, it's every 20 years, but it rotates where it is on Earth.
Oh.
Bob's talking about, I think, the last time it made this arc.
Okay.
Since unlike what Kyrie Irving said, the Earth is round, we believe it goes in different places. So this is like the first time since 1918 it's come on this path, and 20 years later it'll be on a different path.
So like every time the Cubs win the World Series, about that?
Just about.
It's about when these come through, boys.
What was the one that Halley's Comet, every time it came around something happened? Really? It was weird.
I don't know.
Which takes about 100 years. Yeah.
It's if you're able to get to the mountains, I'm kind of jealous. Now my thing is, are we doing this wrong? Should we be hosting this show from Idaho Falls? I have a lot of connections there. I spent a couple of summers in Idaho Falls. I have a place to stay if we need to. So did we do this wrong? Should we have planned ahead to go to Idaho Falls?
We should have.
And take some remote equipment with us and be able to do it there. You're not doing anything else on Monday, right?
I don't think so.
I don't got much going on either. We did this wrong. We should have planned ahead, gotten to Idaho Falls. We could have hosted the show from the Idaho Falls Chuckers ballpark and gotten a cool seat atop the top row of the bleachers there and seen the eclipse
now,
in the best spot.
What the Idaho Chuckers should have done, they should have had a game in the daytime.
Yeah,
and then they could have a
home
stoppage of the game when it got dark. Then they could turn the stadium lights off. People sitting in the stands.
How phenomenal would that be?
That would be fantastic.
That would be the coolest baseball game ever. Right? Like, I know the Alaska League, apparently they have a game start at midnight every year because it's light at midnight with the Alaska calendar. They're away the 21st.
That's a complete failure.
That is a terrible job by the schedule makers.
And the Hawks, by the way, are away because of the fair. And the Hawks, we're talking about the team in Williamsport that has the Little League World Series that they're going to have the Cardinals and Pirates play on Sunday night. The thing that the Williamsport and Boise team share, they both are out of town for like 2 weeks. I did the games one year in Williamsport on the radio, and when the Little League World Series is in town, the minor league team is gone. So we were gone for 2 weeks at the time.
Chris, we got a call from Janice. One, she wants you to know the glass is only $2, but they're sold out.
Uh-oh.
And she said, don't look at the sun with regular sunglasses. You'll burn your eyes out.
See?
So you're out of luck.
This is exactly the Y2K thing.
No, I'm with Janice.
This is the Y2K. You better get this for this $10 computer saver, because when it turns the calendar, it'll blow up on you. Science versus speculation.
Janice and I are going to not look at the sun. We're going to be smart. Jeff Caves in studio here, getting ready to take over with Darren College today at 3 o'clock. Jeff, what plans do you have for the eclipse?
For the eclipse, I will be on Bogus Basin Road. How far up it I go, I don't know yet, because I live on Bogus, so I'll be counting cars. Some people have told me they anticipate that there may be people going up Sunday spending the night. And if that's the case, we'll all see them. And, of course, my challenge is I need to be down here at a certain time to be able to do the show on Monday.
Do we need to be on call if you don't make it down?
Well, I won't go up. I know me. I'm probably looking for reasons to not do that. And I'm far enough up Bogus, though, to where I'm like at 3,000 feet, maybe cross the street and be able to climb up on a hill. But I'm going to get some of those glasses down at Bronco Motors so I don't have any issues. And I am that guy that would say, what harm is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Look up at the sun.
All this hype. Come on. It's not going to really burn your eyes out, right?
I'm that guy. That's the brightest guy. But the college experience today, there are so many pro athlete NFL stories to talk about with Darren College. And Ralph Russo is going to join us from the AP. The poll comes out Monday, I guess, for them. And we'll talk about that. Plus the idea whether or not we need a commissioner in college football to govern themselves. Coaches are all for it. You know, Gary Patterson's for it. Shaw from Stanford is for it. I don't know about every coach, but we'll go down that road, and we'll do it here in just about 5 minutes.
Interesting discussion, Chris. I think that the group that doesn't want it is the NCAA. I don't think they want somebody else to be able to make rulings and do things. So I think unless the NCAA somehow creates that position, I don't think they want college football to have their own, much like the playoff. That's really not NCAA sanctioned. They kind of do their own thing.
You mean somebody with power doesn't want to surrender their power for
Correct.
Free?
Correct.
That's a new bold concept right there.
Well, enjoy the eclipse on Monday. Our post-game eclipse show with Chris and I will be back at 1. Keep it tuned. Caves and College next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.